Hello, hi, welcome back to yet another exciting episode of Sustainability 101. I'm your host Pratiksha with my co-host Abha.
A big hello to all our listeners. Our guest today is Qayum Rajan, the CEO of ESG Analytics. It is a startup that focuses on applying AI to the environmental, social and governance industry. Qayum is a recent recipient of the top 30 under 30 award in British Columbia.
Woohoo! This sounds really exciting as well as motivating. If you find this episode inspiring and useful, let us know by commenting on our Instagram page. We are active on all social media platforms. Don't miss out on your daily dose of motivation on Sustainability 101.
So Qayum, or Q as he has designated himself, he's an avid economist, data scientist and technology executive. To know more about him, his passions, interest and his work, let us welcome Qayum and take this podcast forward.
Welcome to Sustainability 101 podcast. How are you doing?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
Great,
Qayum. I read about you on the net and it seems you were an early starter. So as they say, let's start from the very beginning. So tell us about yourself, your early life and what shaped your interest?
Yeah, that sounds good. Actually, I was born in Vancouver, but I was raised in Kenya. And so I spent a lot of my time growing up there. And I come from a business family, so I think that's where it's in my blood. So from a young age, I was always helping my dad. We had a butchery and a bistro. And so, you know, business was always a core part of the family. One of my biggest passions in life was always finance. So from a very young age, I always wanted to be in finance. I always wanted to be a portfolio manager. And so I went to school for that. But along the way, I also liked technology. So I was coding as a kid, but not that much. It wasn't my main goal. And once I was done school, I worked as a portfolio manager. I worked in the finance departments of a few different investment firms. And then I ended up having an opportunity to start a startup a few years ago when one of the companies was acquired. And so that was a startup in the blockchain space where I really learned how to code, how to manage products and development and things like that. And then after that, I ended up in consulting at Ernst & Young before getting the startup bug again to then start ESG Analytics. And so ESG Analytics combines my passions for technology, for finance, for data, all of them kind of wrapped into one.
Wow, sounds really interesting. And also tell us about when and how you thought about being an entrepreneur and how ESG Analytics was born.
Yeah, so becoming an entrepreneur, I think, like I said, a lot of it stems from just growing up in a family business, but it almost just became the logical thing to do because when I was working, I always felt like part of my brain was missing. Like you'd be working on something, but you have other interests that get drawn. And so I was always drawn towards creating a company, towards creating a startup and things like that. And it just kind of fell into my lap with the time I mentioned where the company was acquired and I had an opportunity to join somebody and create a startup. And I feel really engaged there because you get to spend your time doing a lot of different things. And so it's always flexing all your different muscles in your brain. For ESG Analytics, the way it came across was, you know, like I said, I like finance, but I always used to actually roll my eyes at ESG. The reason being, like, I thought it was a noble mission, but I thought it was being abused. So every time you looked at the ESG ETFs, like the S&P 500 ESG ETFs or, you know, the flex shares, there's a million different ETFs. But inside them, all you saw was, you know, the FANG stocks like Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Google. And it just didn't seem like it was really representing what people wanted to do when they said they wanted to invest in ESG or have sustainable investments. And so I started digging into this. And what I found was that not many companies even have an ESG rating. Like some of the big companies only cover maybe 4,500 companies from an ESG rating perspective. And there's so many more companies than that. And it's usually because the companies, you know, you're looking for big companies to actually create these ratings. And so the idea became, how can we use other types of data that are not analyst-based to create scores, metrics, and analysis for company ESG performance? And that's what we decided to do with ESG Analytics. So we look at data from outside of company disclosures to give you real-time insights, which means we can cover more companies and are not reliant on analyst-based ratings. So we can cover more companies and give people a bigger breadth of exposure when they're looking to mitigate ESG risk or identify companies that meet their values.
Awesome. Amazing. Well,
Yeah, and that is a lot of research for you. And but tell me one thing, you've spoken a bit about data and, you know, you're dealing with corporates mostly. So how easily can you access data? Because, you know, the companies, they're very conservative as far as sharing the data is concerned. So what are the challenges you face in accessing data per se?
That's a good question. So see, that's one of the reasons that we decided to do things the way we do it, is because companies are not just secretive, but they only disclose a little bit of information and they only do it once a year. So our focus is on using data outside of corporate disclosures. So instead of looking at that, what we do is we look at things like news, media, press releases, social, all of these other sort of data sources that are outside of the company's control. And we create algorithms to understand this as if we were an ESG analyst. And so what you're able to then see is, what does the public think about this company? What are their ESG impacts, controversies, opportunities outside of their disclosures? And that gives you a totally different perspective and allows you to pinpoint certain areas. So while, you know, Hershey's might say they're going to net zero, on our side, we see controversies related to, you know, slavery in their cocoa supply chain, right?
Yeah,
using external data.
Yeah, right. Right.
And one more thing for you, you know, the algorithms, I don't understand much of AI, but, you know, what your algorithms suggest, has there been any effort to validate what the AI has suggested and how actually the data is?
For sure. So we do a couple of different things. You know, one, we always, we sample this data on a daily basis to understand if there's any false positives or not. And then the other thing we do is we actually create a correlation between the company's stock price and the results from our algorithms. So it's a sentiment analysis at the end of the day. It tells you how good or bad something is. And when we overlay this on a company's stock price, you can actually see which areas are affected by ESG. And so we found a really high accuracy rate, which has allowed people to actually use this for their day-to-day analysis.
That's great, really. So being an ESG analyst myself, it was quite useful to get your insights. Tell us, what do you think of the future of AI in ESG in specific and in the markets in general?
Yeah, I think it's just a new player that's going to come into town. And I think the two areas that I can comment on are AI plus the alternative data. So with AI, I think we're just being able to process things differently. So, you know, if you were to look at all the articles that come out of for Amazon every single day, yeah, it's like 100,000. Like, you, a person can't literally sit there and look at that, right? Mm-hmm. So this is where, you know, natural language processing algorithms and some of the other tools that we use allow you to process this data at scale and then give the human or the analyst at the other end the raw insights or the process insights. And that way, you know, you're helping the productivity of people. So that's where I think AI comes into play. It's not a it's not a silver bullet. It does a lot of things and helps productivity, but it's not necessarily a replacement for a human in any way, shape, or form. And then the other side of it that I think is really exciting is alternative data. So when we look at things like text and media and news articles and process that with natural language processing, that's a type of alternative data. Other types of alternative data are, for example, looking at the job listings at a company and understanding how that changes over time. And that can give you different indicators, right? Because if you look at the jobs for a company over time, mm-hmm. You know, if it's decreasing or increasing, it can infer something about the company, but that, you know, you might have to wait a while to see that on their corporate disclosures or their reports and things like that. So all these new different data sources are helping us access the markets faster, understand different sort of impacts, and just create new buckets of information, which is maybe scary for the old world of investing.
Well, that is quite interesting because, you know, there's so much of information overload, and AI definitely is an effective tool to, you know, handle that data. But tell me one more thing. Have you made any attempt to model the risks that, you know, the risks that are apparent and, you know, come out with some mitigation scenarios to reduce those risks?
That's a good question. So that's not really been our focus to date. What we do is we like to provide the raw alternative data. So for example, if you pull up a company in our platform, we'll show you their real-time ESG charts. And then we'll also show you a bit of a risk matrix to help you understand, okay, across the 26 different SASB ESG categories, where might this company have some issues? So, you know, whether it's supply chain or labor or ethics or things like that. And then I would say that the users of our platform are the ones that might engage a company. So the ESG consultants that use their platform would take that and engage a company to advise on risk mitigation or different communication strategies, or an analyst might be using this data on behalf of their portfolio to then engage. That's where we sort of draw the line in our role in the ESG industry, but we're more of a data provider as opposed to engaging with the direct companies.
Okay.
You also mentioned some of the major influences in your life, and please share some gem with our audience too, and like mentors or some books which gave you clarity and guided you in this ESG space, and what guided you to come into this space, because ESG is booming right now, and in India there is like rapid growth of ESG. You can see there is, every time you can open a LinkedIn, there is one opportunity. People want to learn what ESG is. They want to involve in this space, because that is what we can do right now. Company needs to disclose their model about their business and everything related to, apart from financial background, there is a disclosure about financial reporting. Every year company used to do financial reporting, and now they have to do a non-financial reporting, and it is a voluntary. So what do you think, people or companies should wait for becoming its compulsory, or they should start doing it? What is your idea behind it, or what is your answer?
No, I think my position on this is that basically, okay, so it's voluntary to disclose your ESG data today, right? You can choose SASB, TCFD, whatever framework to do that as a company. And then you also have new developments, like the SEC is considering whether this should be regulated or not. And in the EU, some parts are regulated, some parts are not. So it's a bit of a puzzle piece for companies. But what I will say is that the reason that companies should disclose is from a liquidity perspective, because what's happening now is a lot of investors are including ESG as a criteria before they make a final decision, or it's one of the main decisions. So pension funds, for example, are including ESG as the criteria, along with all the financials and everything else, before they make an investment decision, which means that if you don't disclose enough data for investors to use, you have a big chance of companies, of investment firms not holding your stock or divesting you completely, which also means you might not be included in other ETFs, which also means you might not have the liquidity that you need as a company. So I think it's a competitive advantage to do that, to appease the investors, because it's just become this other category that's here. And you can see that there is increasing regulation around it. So why not get ahead of that, right?
Yeah, right.
Tell me one more thing, Kayum. Is the clientele limited to Canada only, because ESG analytics is Canada-based, if I understand it correctly? Or do you have a broader footprint? Do you engage other countries also?
That's a really good question.
And in case you do, then how do you find that ESG landscape different between different countries? I'm talking in terms of the favorable environment that is being provided by companies, because there's a lot of difference between, even if you compare US and Europe, there's a lot of difference in the entire ideology in which it works. So what difference do you find?
That's a good question. And so from a company coverage point of view, so we're a Canadian-based company, but we cover companies globally. So we have over 60 different stock exchanges that are listed in our platform. So we have no bias to any country in the world. And actually our plan is to cover every listed company in the entire world, which is not going to be a hard task to do because we're using different technology. To that end, we do find that, US firms have the most information out there. US and European firms do have the most information out there, but it's starting to come up in different areas. So for example, we have customers that want ESG information in Bulgaria and in Estonia or different parts of Canada. And the reality of it is, for our kinds of data, we look at, again, alternative data, and you do find less information outside of the US and the EU, which is changing now. But that's where, there tends to be, maybe like 30 or 40% of the companies have majority of the insights versus a few insights for the rest of them, which is a big opportunity for all of those smaller companies.
Well, that is a lot of information to wrap the mind around, we have a limitation of time limitation. So thank you for sharing your insights. But, our next segment, the technicalities we've covered so far, and the next segment of our podcast is the rapid fire round. with Pratiksha at the firing end. So brace yourself, Kuyum.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So let me ask you 2-3 things. Like, what is the first thing that comes to your mind when I say life?
Curiosity.
Your company.
ESG.
Future of AI.
Growth.
Podcast.
Sustainability.
Business.
Crush the competition.
Oh, that's honestly great answers. So yeah, next part is just a short answer you can give to the next question. So what keeps you motivated and what brings smile on your face while working in ESG space?
I get motivated by just working on new and exciting things. So for using new technologies and building cool products, that's where I get excited because it makes every day fun. What brings a smile on my face is when you talk to some people and you can show them an insight that they might not have had before. So we showed, for example, a fund, the Activision Blizzard case that we did, and they actually divested the company from their portfolio. So things like that are really encouraging and make us feel like we're doing something with purpose.
Yeah. And next question, what are the essential skills, tech plus non-tech, for getting into ESG domain?
I think from a, there's a lot of different areas that you can enter ESG from. So I can speak from the finance side. It really is, having your traditional analysis skills for a company, but being able to then understand the ESG frameworks and concepts and being able to add that to your analysis. But of course, you can enter this from the marketing side or the PR side or things like that. From the data side, being able to build traditional web applications, that's a skill into itself. But from the data side, really picking up some Python early on, I think you can go a long way into anyone's technical capabilities.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. And the last one, how does it feel when you are part of Forbes 30 Under 30?
Not the Forbes, but it was the BC Top 30 Under 30.
Oh.
And
okay.
It feels good to be recognized. And, I think it gives you appreciation for the work that you've done to date.
Okay, great. So Abha will take one more question. So probably the last question for today, because I'm still full of questions. Let's say I have a company the company exists. They keep on hearing ESG, climate reporting, sustainability reporting, investor, stakeholder. They are lost in all of these buzzwords. They don't know where to start. What would you suggest? And let's say they are really committed. They want to start, touching and tasting with the ESG data of their own. Where do they have to start? And what would you suggest them to do first? And at which point should they approach you or ESG Tech platform for help?
Good question. So I think, the hardest thing about getting started is just getting started, right? So for them to do some research, understand the landscape of ESG, the frameworks, they can do that research. But what I would say is that they're not alone, right? So when companies actually want to implement ESG today, there's lots of tools, applications, and resources for them to do this. So, we don't play a part in company disclosures, but other applications like Novisto or NASA Data or Sulytics in Switzerland, they all have applications that companies can go in, they can add the data that they do have, understand where they need to find more data, and they can start crafting their sustainability reports for climate, for TCFD or SASB, whatever. That's where they can do it. Where we come in is in being able to help them understand how the public looks at them. So once they start disclosing, and even before that, they can use our platform to do an analysis on themselves to understand where they might need to do some work. They can monitor their communication as they do this, so they can monitor their reputation. And they can also benchmark themselves against their peer group to understand how their competitors are managing their ESG versus themselves. And that can give a lot of insights into their communications and their ESG strategy.
Oh, that was...
That was quite informative, Qayyum. And you know, we are limited by time, so I'll just pitch in one last question. And you know, when I read about you on your LinkedIn profile and other media reports that have covered you, you mentioned some major influences in your life. You know, so can you please share with us, you know, in terms of mentors or books that have helped you, you know, get a clarity of thought?
Yeah, let me think about this one because I'm blanking a little bit, but. You know, there was just like one quote that really stuck out to me that I was given a while ago, which was that your crest will change, but your name stays the same. And what that means is that, you know, you got to mentor and create the brand around yourself, and everything else, you know, changes in life and things like that. But that's one of the things that really stuck out to me. And then for mentors, you know, it's an interesting world today because you can kind of get mentorship from a million different places. So for me, following people on Twitter like Sahil Abinga, who owns Gumroad, and other people like that, they are really good insights into how to build a business and, you know, how to structure remote teams and stuff like that today. But I wouldn't say that I have, like, you know, one direct mentor as a person who's played that part in my life. But really, it's just come from a lot of different sources.
Okay, great. That's amazing. It was insightful talk. Like, it was really insightful when I was talking with you about the EST, because you are the founder of the company, so you know better where to start and what to do. What do you think about environmental, social, and governance and economy? What, according to you, is of first priority of world or company or businesses?
I think they're heavily intertwined, right?
Okay.
Because I think one of the reasons that ESG is taking off right now is because the economic incentives are now being put into place. So like I said, when investment into companies is now being blocked by ESG, all of a sudden that's the economics and ESG coming together. Whereas before, I think, you know, a lot of things were voluntary with no financial impact. And then the other thing is like the price of carbon. So as companies start to go towards net zero and things like that, they have to offset. And offsetting is a huge, huge industry right now with carbon credits being traded and stuff like that. And again, that's the combination of ESG and economics. So they're, yeah, I think, totally intertwined. And the reason and the fact that they're intertwined is why things are now taking off in a way that we haven't seen before.
And one more thing, what are the tools which you use in ESG space? Like, I know the AI and blockchain you use, but what kind of other stuff for ESG we can use or the general people can use? So I am reading sustainability reports, and that's how I get to know about the company. What else we can do? Like, how we can, get data from the company, and what kind of technology or what kind of software do you use for that? Like, if it's okay to share.
One thing that's been really helpful to us is companies like SASB. So, okay, you know, the reporting frameworks that they have,
yeah,
because, you know, if you go there, like SASB has an awesome materiality map,
yeah,
which I think is really innovative. So I think that's like one of the prime resources, because people get lost in ESG because it's so broad. And ESG, yes, really covers everything. But if you look at something like the materiality map, you can then understand, you know, per individual sector and subsector, what are the issues I need to care about? So that way, when you look at, you know, BP versus Facebook versus whatever else, you, yeah, understand, yeah, that, okay, you know what, there's obviously a broad ecosystem here, but if I'm looking at BP, I just need to focus on these 3-4 issues and see how they're performing there. And I think that helps to narrow it down and go from there.
Yeah, even I like SASB's reporting standards, because those are really clear cut. And when I read about SASB framework, I was doing one by one, like GRI, then IR, then every framework I learned, I got to know a lot about those frameworks. But then when I study about SASB, I was like, this is the framework I want to use in future. So yeah, that was quite interesting.
So, you know, Pratiksha herself is an ESG practitioner, you know, so she has, so she's got a lot of, she can understand your,
yeah,
lingo.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How ESG framework actually work?
So it's pretty interesting. I mean, I can just speak from my context, but you know, for example, with SASB, they have 77 industries that they classify, and within each industry, they give you a report on what things you need to disclose, right? And so there's a whole list. And when I've talked to some of the ESG consultants today who work with companies to disclose, you know, they work hand in hand to do the different things. Like there's some disclosure that's going to come from your strategy, but other times they are, you know, literally collecting the receipts for your plane rides and the electricity bills for scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, and you know, estimating things in platforms to then report on different things. So it's funny because it's at the end of the day, it's like you're going to the company, you're collecting all the data you need and understanding their vision and their strategy, and then putting it according to one of these frameworks and being able to disclose that data. So it's really interesting to see like how that actually works under the scenes, because you always wonder sometimes where this giant sustainability report comes from, right?
What two practices of ESG disclosures do investor value most? Because that is the question I'm stuck at.
Yeah, I think you'll be stuck on that question forever, actually. But the reason being is because I think every investor is different. So even in our own platform, we see people that come and, you know, for example, we have like all the SASB categories. So it's, you know, 26 different ESG metrics, but there are some people that only care about climate, and there's some people that care only about, you know, social, and there's some people who care about everything combined. So I think it's a big part of this is matching investors' values and views to the data that's available, because not everybody cares about everything. And some people are just looking for also a quick point of reference. So it's fluid.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I can relate to it very much because I come both. Yeah, because you know I come from the policy domain, and how things are designed at one particular level, and then when you actually execute through a strategy, you find that you know sustainability is good in terms of overlap between environment and social and governance. But you know where does the priority lie in? As far as business and corporates are concerned, it's very debatable. So how effective it is? It's very I don't know. So Q, that was a lot of information, and you had really interesting informative answers. Thank you so much. In fact, I also got an idea of ESG a bit after talking to you. So thank you for taking your time out, for sharing your insights with us. It really cleared a lot of confusions, and as far as Pratiksha covered, very pertinent questions you answered, and some of the questions that maybe she's going to get entangled for a little long. So thank you very much again.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for listening to this podcast, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. In case you still have any questions or suggestions how to explore the ESG topic more, and please approach me or Q. Let us know your feedback. We would be very happy and excited to have your feedback. If you like the podcast, please leave a review, rate, comment on the platform you're listening on. I guess we are now available on 11 platforms, so see you there. It helps other people to discover the podcast, and your opinion certainly matters. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Q, for helping us understand ESG in a better way. Until then, bye-bye.